And welcome everybody to the Sleeper Wire Show. I am your host, George. With me this week, same guy that was with me last week. It'll be the same guy that will be with me next week because, well, let's face it, he's got no life. Nader, how are you doing, sir?
I mean, you're kind of correct about the no life part, but I mean, you're pretty right.
You'll be with me next week. And also joining us, we have Peter Howard. You can find him on Twitter at Howdy. He's a content creator at DLF Football and the Dino Crossroads. Peter, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing pretty good, man. Thanks for asking me to come on. I don't know the whole Nader thing not having a life is true. He seems to be the only one sitting in a fancy studio in the middle of where the action is. And we're both locked in our houses by the look of it.
He's got a very impressive green screen. I will say.
Oh, is that a green screen? I didn't know.
Yeah, you know, hold on. Let me move it out of the way a little bit. There you go.
Don't destroy the magic for me. You're out there living your best life, you know?
I mean, you can see, like, Peter's in a small office. I'm in a small office. And we got Nader in this wonderful giant recording studio.
Sorry, you did say audio only before we started, so this makes no sense to anyone. I shouldn't have led with it.
Okay. It's fine. It's absolutely fine. So I'm glad to hear everybody's doing good. This week we are going to be doing some Dynasty Startup Values. These are guys that were taken based on a Superflex ADP. Guys that we just see in the draft that are just considered startup values. But before we get into that, I do want to go over the news. There's a little bit of news. We had Carson Wentz has agreed in principle to the trade to the Colts for a 2020 second round pick and a third that could become a second if he plays 75% of the snaps or more. What do you guys think about that Carson Wentz trade to Indianapolis? Peter, you are the guest. I'll let you go first.
Yeah, is this a cap thing? Because the price is real low, which obviously we want to reflect on the player's value, I guess, at this point. But just to ask, because I'm basically blind to cap problems, but Nick Whalen, also Smalls, have been pointing out on Twitter that the NFL is going to be in a big cap.
So
that's the word grind because of the reduced cap. Is that factoring into this deal?
Well, I think a lot of it factors into not just the cap, but I think they just want to move on from Carson Wentz. They got Jalen Hurts back there, who when he was coming out last year, I was saying that this kid is going to be impressive in the NFL and that he just needs a chance, that he's going to get into that locker room. He's an actual true locker room leader. And that his teammates are just going to absolutely want to go to battle with him once they see him get on the field, the way he carries himself and all that. And I'm glad to see he's getting a chance. I think he's going to be probably a top 15 quarterback in the NFL. But in the realm of fantasy football, I can see him making the top 10 with both his throwing and his rushing ability.
To Peter's point, the cap is actually going down by, I think, $17 million next year. I think it's going to be around the 190 mark. So his huge cap hit definitely took a value. I mean, Matthew Stafford is only going to be taking a $20 million cap hit next year. For reference, Jimmy Garoppolo is $27 million of a cap hit. So he's taking less than Jimmy Garoppolo, but he has the talent of a potential top 10 to top 5 quarterback, which is why, of course, the Rams had to pay up 2 first rounders for him. But I mean, to answer your question, I do think this is good for the Colts. They have a better upgrade at quarterback. I mean, they already have a solid offensive line. They do have a solid wide receiving core. They got a solid running game. I think Wentz has the ability to succeed in this offense.
So do you guys think Carson Wentz is better than what Phillip Rivers was last year?
That's kind of what I was going to draw. Like, I'm not a big quarterback talent evaluator. It seems to be wizardry to understand what it takes to actually be good at that position from my moron perspective. But like, even if he can just maintain, you know, Phillip Rivers at the end of his career, that's good news for the Colts and that's a good price to get it at. And so, yeah, I'm pretty excited about that.
I mean, there's potentially no T.Y. Hilton. He is a free agent. We don't know exactly where he's going to sign. And with the addition of Carson Wentz, they might not be able to afford T.Y. Hilton back. So I do question what they're going to do in the wide receiving core. But, I mean, like you said, Peter, as long as he holds the same value that Phillip Rivers did, then I'm perfectly fine taking any wide receiver in that team.
It's actually something we were talking about with the DLF team. Like, teams seem to be willing to move on from quarterbacks a little bit more than they have done in the recent past. And that, to me, means it's going to inflate the value, rightly so, of those who have got locked. Like, Patrick Mahomes gets a little extra boost because you don't have to worry they're going to move on. But even a Jared Goff-level quarterback, like we just mentioned, we can see just disappear from our little game because teams seem a little bit more willing to move on. And my mind immediately goes to that means the production at those less certain quarterbacks is going to come a little cheaper, and Wentz kind of falls into that. Like, I think he'd be productive enough for us at the quarterback position in fantasy, and he, because of the instability, it actually might push his value down a little bit. I kind of like that.
Yeah, I sent out a tweet earlier, and I was 100% honest. Like, I didn't know if Carson Wentz is a better quarterback than Derek Carr. Like, I, for fantasy purposes, I kind of have them both in the same tier. But as an NFL quarterback, I'm not sure he's even better than Derek Carr, to be honest.
I would rather have Derek Carr. I don't know if that answers your question.
Again, it's weird to measure quarterbacks. Like, Derek Carr is one of the few in the league right now that has supported two top 24 wide receivers. So it's a little hard to throw too much shade at him. Like, he's for fantasy, and that way he's been good. And I guess my perspective would be I don't care. If that's the level of production he's given me, I don't mind if he doesn't have that upside because it's going to come at a pretty reasonable price.
Yeah, I think the Colts really – and Carson Wentz is the guy for them for this. I think they just need a game manager. I don't think they need a top 10, top 15 quarterback. They just need somebody to go out there and not turn the ball over. And if Carson Wentz can do that between their offensive line, their running game, and the offensive weapons that they have currently in place – I think they're in their defense, which is absolutely amazing.
I think you've made me worried by saying T.Y. Hilton's not going to be there. Like, I like the tight ends there. It seems to be a fixture of their offense as well. I think lots of them have enough talent. But, like, can I get T.Y. Hilton too? I'm not a big believer in Michael Pittman. I think he's decent. I don't think he's the T.Y. Hilton difference maker. So I'm a little worried about skill positions now. You said that. I
do want to bring up Trey Burton, who was a former Eagle, and Carson Wentz actually really liked Trey Burton. And then when Zach Ertz was injured, I believe it was 3 years ago, Trey Burton was a tight end one in the small spurt that he was starting in Ertz's place. I mean, I think this is a huge boost to tight ends. Whichever one is going to be the starting tight end for Wentz, because he really loves tight ends and he loves dumping off the running backs. I think that's where I'm going to see and predict is going to be the boost in production rather than the wide receivers.
So what you're essentially saying is undrafted free agents matter. I'm a fan. I'm on board. Nader said it.
There we go. Finally. If I said it works.
They absolutely do matter, though. That's the thing. They absolutely do.
They do.
we'll move on from the Colts. I have a feeling that question was put in here specifically from Chris. Next we got up here is Trevor Lawrence held his own pro day and is still considered the 101 in Superflex drafts. That shocks absolutely nobody. Had surgery on his non-throwing shoulder. I honestly, it's his non-throwing shoulder. I'm not concerned at all. Are you guys concerned about the surgery there?
Again, quarterback heavy, man. I got nothing for you. I hear he's great, and I imagine he'll be great. If the doctors say he's ready to go, he's ready to go. I don't second guess that, so that's fine by me.
You know, I hope I am 101 in a lot of leagues because I really want to take him.
I don't want to be one.
Everyone I know who I think, sorry, everyone I know who I think has some insight into quarterbacks seems to think he's amazing. So yep. I'm not going to disagree.
I mean, yeah. There's a lot of quarterbacks that we think are amazing coming out of college, but I mean, NFL is a different thing. But I mean, if he's 101 or wherever he is available, you're taking him.
I'm probably trading the pick, but cool.
I agree. There you go. Trade the pick. Get a boatload for it. Bears are expected to franchise tag Allen Robinson and possibly trade him. I wish they would just let him sign where he wants, but whatever. That's what Chicago's doing.
That's not what Allen Robinson gets for this career in this life, apparently. It's a really good move by the Bears. I would franchise tag a player with that level of talent. Like, you got to keep him, but God, I would like to see him in a good situation.
So I blame Allen Robinson for the situation he's in because he was a 100% free agent when he left Jacksonville and he chose to go to Chicago over Green Bay, who was heavily courting him. So I don't feel too bad for Allen Robinson because he put himself in that situation. But I'm not a big fan of teams being allowed to franchise tag players. And
yeah, it's kind of sucks.
They go.
Yeah.
So
I don't mind that. I think Allen Robinson is one of the most underrated wide receivers in the NFL.
Which is weird. It's almost like everyone knows, but we also know kind of sucky situation. Like, we know he's got it, but
I mean, he's been quarterback proof his whole fantasy career. I mean, he had Blake Bortles throwing it to him, and he was still a phenomenal wide receiver. And then he had Mitchell Trubisky, and he was still putting up wide receiver one numbers. Nick Foles, wide receiver one numbers still. I mean, he has been quarterback proof, which I think increases his value.
And here's the last one we got is with limited cap space, although they can always move funds around. Some are speculating Chris Carson will not return to Seattle. My take on cap space is it's an imaginary number. I don't want to hear because of cap space, you can't sign this player or you can't trade this player. We've learned between Jared Goff getting traded, now Carson Wentz, last year it was David Johnson, all these contracts that there's no way nobody will ever trade for that contract. They can be moved. Players can be moved regardless of the contract. And good GMs can find a way to maneuver the cap. So to me, I don't think he's going to return to Seattle, but I don't think it's got anything to do with the cap.
Yeah, my understanding in general of NFL money is that it's fake in that there's billions behind each team that they can utilize if they want to find a way to use it. They cap it for different kind of reasons. So yeah, they can move it around in seven different ways. I would say, again, back to Smalls and Nick Whalen's point, this year might be a little different, but trying not to advocate as a cap expert here because they're not numbers I fully understand, but they might have some extra difficulties this year, it seems, because they are cutting the cap so much.
I was told they use monopoly money in the NFL and no team actually
feels that way.
I mean, the Saints are, I think, $70 million over the cap, so they're going to have to do some fancy footwork in order to get that technically
right
within its rules. And I'm sure they will. I mean, they're going to have to cut a player or two, but I mean, with Chris Carson not returning to Seattle, the running backs have always succeeded in that system. They drafted two recently. Carlos Hyde's a free agent. They have cheaper alternatives. Chris Carson is a little bit expensive. He's probably expecting around the $7 to $8 million per year. I don't think he gets anywhere near that. Yes.
Especially at running back, it's a little easier, it seems like, to get replaceable talent. But I mean, Seattle's identity, they want their identity to be the running game. And Chris Carson's kind of developed his own little aura around him, given the path that he's taken. And then, you know, they did draft a running back in the first round, and then Chris Carson's still better. But and they can replace him if they want to. Mm-hmm. Probably the fairest answer.
So if they paid him $8 million a year, like you said, Nader, that would make him a top 10 paid running back in the NFL. That's not happening.
No, I mean, to think of it, Jerick McKinnon was, I think, a top 10 paid running back at the time until he restructured his contract to take less money to stay on the Niners. So, I mean, paying a running back, in my opinion, is a little ridiculous. I wouldn't do it. But, I mean, if the Seahawks do it and that's their identity, then I'm all for it, especially as a Niners fan. I love it when teams make terrible financial decisions.
I'm a Chris Carson fan, man. Once you own me so thoroughly, and he really did. Like, I liked him, and I spent all that offseason talking about how he was good. I just believed in Rashad Penny, and then Chris Carson just owned my soul. And I have a deep affection for guys who are able to do that. The numbers are against you, and you just still crush. Like, that's pretty cool, man.
I mean, I have Chris Carson in multiple dynasty leagues because I thought he was going to be phenomenal and fantastic, which he is. But he also hasn't been healthy. He's never played a full 16-game season. You can't be a ground-and-pound team and not play or not have your running backs play when you really need them the most. And that's when the Seahawks struggled last year. It was midseason. Chris Carson was hurt. They ended up signing, you know, free agent off the street guys. They had their fourth round stringer in.
Well, they're such a run heavy team. That's why their running backs get injured. They use them so much. There's no way when you have that kind of usage and run the ball the way Seattle does, and as much as they want, or that you're going to have somebody stay healthy for 16 games.
Which is 100% true, but whoever is the running back in Seattle is going to get a lot of touches. They're going to be very fantasy productive, and you want that running back.
You do.
I'm having flashbacks to Rashad Penny here. Could we not? Stuff I had so much hope for.
All right, so I'm going to do our little Patreon plug real quick. If you want to win a Chris Godwin or a Kenny Golladay signed jersey, Slipperwire is running a contest where once we reach 100 patrons at patreon.com/slipperwire, we will randomly pick one person, announce them on the show, and they'll get to have the jersey of their choice. Personally, I like the Kenny Golladay jersey better than the Chris Godwin, but it's more about the signature quality for me. Even the $1 tier gets you in, so check out the Slipperwire patron at patreon.com/slipperwire. Get in the contest. All right, Dynasty Startup Values. We're done with the news. We're going to move into the meat and potatoes here. As mentioned before, we're going to talk some notable Dynasty values and their current perceived value and whether or not it's a realistic spot given all the unknowns. Nader, you went ahead and filled this out first, so I'm going to throw it to you. The first person you had on here as a Dynasty value is Gabriel Davis. So why don't you talk a little bit about Gabriel Davis?
He's now going to be the sophomore receiver for the Bills, drafted in the fourth round. And he's currently right now fourth string on the depth chart. And being fourth string on the depth chart, he had 600 yards and 7 touchdowns, which is pretty unheard of for a person that is currently fourth on the depth chart. And I mean, now that we talk about cap value going down, they have to decide, do they want to keep people like John Brown on that roster? And I mean, if they do decide to release him, he's going to be elevated. And we saw him kind of dominate in the playoffs a little bit. He had a couple phenomenal toe tap grabs, and he really set the tone for the receiving core. And with with Stephon Diggs being as elite as he is, I expect teams to really bracket him, double him, try to slow him down as much as possible, which is going to give him the opportunity to really elevate.
Peter, you want to go ahead and give us one of your Dynasty values?
I didn't know this was a thing. It's really weird because right after the season, I was literally having to argue with people that T. Higgins, for example, or Brandon Ayuk was worth more than a first. And it seems like we're getting closer to the draft, and every year those perceived values change. I'm not sure how many people would give you a first for Gabriel Davis. I love it. It's kind of this weird mix between low draft capital and Tyler Boyd, in that he's having a Tyler Boyd first season. Tyler Boyd had a great first season, especially where he was, because Seattle tends towards not using rookies. And everyone underrated it because it wasn't an overly impressive fantasy season. You know, 700 yards, I think it was at the time, and not enough fantasy points. So his value actually dropped in that second year, and I got all the Tyler Boyd. It was great. But Gabriel Davis had that level of production season. That's an amazing rookie year, especially for a fourth-round draft pick, even in a COVID-tainted year. I think Gabriel Davis proves something. Unfortunately, the reason all my low draft value players normally don't work out is the NFL still cares. I do think there's a draft bias in the NFL, and that they'll keep trotting out Laquon Treadwell even after Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen are clearly better. They're just clearly, and eventually they were able to force the issue. It's very obvious now. But, I mean, NFL teams still keep leaning in it, and so that's my concern with Davis. I think he's proved something. I think he had a great rookie year. I worry the NFL doesn't care. So, yeah, I'm just talking about your values now, so that's a little unfair. And plucking someone I would trade a first-round pick for, but again, I didn't go and do my research, so I don't know. Like, Brandon Ayuk and T. Higgins are clearly worth more than a first, in my opinion, and based on your values here, I'm assuming that's what most people think, so they aren't fair answers. So what am I looking for? For a first rounder, I'm either looking for a proven producer who may be getting a little underrated because of age or, you know, various narratives around it, or I'm looking for a productive rookie with those first round picks, because those are both better bets than someone who gets randomly drafted mid to late first round. So I've tried to give myself some space here, and I still don't have an answer. And the only guy that's stuck in my head right now, because we were talking to me about how I got this wrong last year, is OBJ. And that leads me to think about Jarvis Landry. Could you potentially get an older, aging wide receiver for a first? Is he in that conversation, or is that too high?
If you have Gabriel Davis and I offered you Jarvis Landry, would you take that trade?
I would take Jarvis Landry. Yeah.
You take Jarvis Landry over Gabriel Davis. Ooh.
Yeah. And I'd feel dirty and nasty about it, but yeah.
Okay. So say you have Gabriel Davis, and I offer you maybe like a second Robbie Anderson. And a Jamal.
Oh, I just found a name. Carry on. No. Sorry, what were you going to say?
So if you have Gabriel Davis, I offer you maybe a second rounder and say Jamal Williams. Would you take it?
For Jarvis Landry?
No, for Gabriel Davis.
Oh, right. A second rounder and who? For
Jamal Williams.
No, I don't have much interest in Jamal Williams, though. No, I'd probably take the ride with my lower draft brethren there.
What about like a startup dynasty? Where would you feel comfortable taking him? Like 14th round, 12th round, 10th round?
Again, I wish I could pull up my ranks, but that feels like cheating at this point. Gabriel Davis, from memory in ADP, yeah, you're talking double-digit rounds, at least, I would say, for Gabriel Davis. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair. So I mean, I'd like to see him around the 14th.
According to Fantasy Pros right now, Gabriel Davis is wide receiver 61.
61. Ooh, that's actually a pretty good ranking, considering everything.
The actual input I might be able to add here, because I have relatively few valuable things to add, but the problem with Gabriel Davis is that I don't think he's ever going to be someone that breaks through like Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen. They have a different skill set. I think they have higher ceilings, which means he's always going to be about production rather than value. So I don't think he's going to get, you might get a value. If he hits again, you'll get a value return, but it's not going to be a huge one. He's always going to be a muted value. I don't think he reaches the heights of someone like Stephon Diggs or Adam Thielen or even T.Y. Hilton, who I think, if memory serves, was drafted in the fourth round. And so he's a production bet, which is fine. I love those guys, those lower drafted wide receivers that get pushed down, but you can still start week to week. But just beware, you're buying someone there for his production, not a potential value increase, because I think that's less likely. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love... Fourth round picks and below, that's my jam, man. But they're almost always more about production than value. So you're not going to trade him for a first and then flip him for a first plus, but you might get a startable wide receiver. Make sense?
Yeah, complete sense.
Cool. And the name that suddenly came to me because I was thinking about him earlier, there was a poll earlier, Devontae Adams and Robbie Anderson. And I like Devontae Adams plenty coming in, but it struck me that one has excelled in every situation he's been put in, no matter how much we doubted him, and the other one has done the opposite. And like, I would pay a first Robbie Anderson right now. Is that a good name?
Oh, that's probably fair.
I think you would be able to get Robbie Anderson plus for a first right now.
Oh, okay. So even a little lower.
Okay. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Robbie Anderson, and you are correct. I mean, if you excel on the Jets,
and then
you're probably an elite receiver.
And then you go to a congested situation, so you've even got – and still
he had it – like you said, there was three fantasy viable receivers, and DJ Moore, Curtis Samuel, and now Robbie Anderson, and you're still fighting with Christian McCaffrey. Of course, he was injured all last year, and then Mike Davis, who was still a fantasy productive running back. There was a lot of fantasy productive players on the Carolina Panthers, and I mean, Robbie Anderson just kind of led the pack, which I think is phenomenal for his value, and one, it just showcases his skill set and how the Jets were potentially hindering him.
I mean, he struggled with touchdowns. That's why it didn't feel as great, especially towards the end there. But it's a harder thing to blame, in my opinion, a player for, because touchdowns kind of randomish. So I was really impressed with him this year.
So do we know Robbie Anderson's ADP value, especially in a dynasty startup?
Right now, he's wide receiver 47.
Yeah, I got wide receiver 44 last time I dragged DLF ADP. 119th overall, which I think is getting towards double digits, actually, isn't it?
Yeah, because 120 is the beginning of the 10th round. So
in a 10 team, a 12 team rank.
12 team. That,
there we go.
Yeah, that was me. It looks like I'm a little higher than DLF. They have him 123rd overall, position rank 50. So again, that was a few weeks ago, last time I dragged it. But I think he's an interesting name. But again, in the same way and in the same vein as Gabriel Davis, it's much more of a production pick than a value pick. He's not going to become worth multiple firsts, but he might be a startable wide receiver for you at lower value.
So is there anybody in the draft, Peter, that you would say has the potential to return you multiple first-round picks that is probably going to end up being drafted outside the top three rounds.
I mean,
like who's that wide receiver that has potentially can just break out this year?
Well, that's a good question. Trying to compare the opposite of what I'm saying, and I think that's where you're typically aiming for young wide receivers who have had some production, decent production so far. So again, that would be T. Higgins, Brandon Ayuk. If any of them were to have a great year next year, they are suddenly worth multiple firsts. I mean, Justin Jefferson and Jerry Jeudy is kind of cheating because they've already had top 24 seasons, but those other two also had great rookie seasons, so they're young producers. And if they had a top 24 season next year, I think everyone would be real hyped for them because they've got the draft capital. And if they got the fantasy return in 2021, then I think they could be. Yeah.
If somebody comes up to me and says, "Hey, give me two first rounders, I'll give you Brandon Ayuk," I'll do that in a heartbeat.
Well, he asked, "We're going to be if they could be if they did well."
Sure, like I do, I said, right now.
Robbie Anderson does well next year. I don't think he's becoming worth multiple first. T. Higgins does well next year. I think you're starting to look at multiple first to get him.
Let me ask you this:
I'm being very cagey because I like you owe me with Odell Beckham. Obviously, last time I was on here, reminded me of it first thing. So, like, I don't want to come back next year and be like, "Well, you said." Like, I want to stop the L's. So,
I got the read receipts. I got the text receipts.
I don't get me wrong. I'm very clear. I'm wrong a lot, but I'm having fun. So that's fine.
There we go.
So if you had, let's say you had Cortland Sutton, and somebody comes up to you and says, "Hey, I'll trade you T. Higgins for Cortland Sutton." You take that, right?
I want whichever one has lower value. And when you're doing an even trade, I'd probably keep Higgins because he's got more, like he doesn't have to do nearly as much to raise his value because he is young and he's part of the 2020 class and that has its own aura around it right now. Yep. But I probably prefer Sutton. Does that answer it?
And I'm going off of Fantasy Pros. They've got T. Higgins at wide receiver 19 and Cortland Sutton's at wide receiver 20. So they're
okay. They're back to back. Yeah,
they're back to back. That's why I was asking. I didn't want to go out.
So it is even. Out. That's a fair question. And that's a rough one, man. That's rough.
I would take T. Higgins because the quarterback situation. Right now, I think the Bengals have a better quarterback situation, and I don't expect AJ Green to be there next year. So he would be a much more elevated target with higher potential, in my opinion. And of course, Cortland Sutton's coming off of a torn ACL. We don't know how great he could be, depending on how he does with his rehab.
Yeah, that's fair. I like Sutton on the basis that he should have lower value. If he doesn't, and you literally just prove they don't, 19 and 20, yeah, I lean Higgins there a lot.
Yeah, there we go.
It just feels nasty because Sutton's great.
Sutton is great, but I'm the one thing I'm concerned about Sutton is his wide receiver core is that they got a deep core with Jerry Jeudy, Tim Patrick, the other guy they drafted last year. I can't think of his name off the top of my head. Hamler, KJ Hamler.
There you go.
Like, so it's a crowded wide receiver core, and then as of right now, it's Drew Lock. Like, I'm all aboard. I'd much rather have T. Higgins.
I'm glad people are coming on board the Tim Patrick, because that was my reason for liking Cortland Sutton less. Undrafted free agents matter, damn it. It didn't matter just enough. But this year, he mattered a lot. And I enjoyed another undrafted free agent doing stuff. But I know, again, I just my paranoid, bitter, curmudgeon nature just won't allow me to believe that the teams were going to let Tim Patrick roll. But yeah, you're right. Jerry Jeudy is at least somewhat of a congested situation. But Tyler Boyd and T. Higgins, I would say they were more insulated in terms of their roles and just as proven, if not congested, if you know what I mean?
Yep, I completely agree.
I mean, the quarterback's a fairly good point. It's probably a more solid team to be invested in, to be fair. But then again, we're talking about the Bengals. So...
And another thing you have to think about when taking something like this is the teams they go against. I mean, the division for the Broncos is much weaker. I mean, the Chiefs, they don't necessarily have a good secondary. The Raiders had statistically the worst secondary. The Chargers, they're still in the rebuilding phases, and they also had a relatively weaker secondary last year. So, I mean, Cortland Sutton is going to face weaker teams than the Bengals are, who are going to face the Steelers, the Ravens, and
yeah, but
one more other team. The Browns next year.
The situation's changed, though. Like the teams we think are going to be good end up not being very good, and the teams that we think sometimes are going to be bad, they end up surprising you at times. So I don't get into the whole narrative of, well, this is a weaker division or this is a stronger division. Outside of, like, the Chiefs, yeah, you're going to throw a lot against them. So
I strongly agree, but I would say in Nader's defense, because I'm going to pretend you're attacking him right now, and I'm the voice.
Sweet. I like it.
We have to make, if they're 19 and 20, you've got to find a decision point. And from what we know of the teams right now, I think that's a fair breakdown in terms of the toughness of the defenses they face, even though we know it's a narrative, because that can change, especially a defense year over year. I guess you can solidify that between, you know, they're facing better organized teams rather than better defenses. If you know what I mean, the management, the structures there seem to be a little more trustworthy and make better decisions on a whole. But yeah, it is very much engaging in narrative street.
I mean, yeah, structures change, teams change. But I mean, when's the last time the Steelers had a bad defense? When's the last time the Ravens had a bad defense? When's the last time? I mean, of course, the Browns were not, you know, they're a laughingstock 3 years ago. And now they're, you know, on the come up. But I would still say that the Broncos have a much better situation in pass defense than the
it's actually Brown, man, died for us sins.
The other way around.
Nader, I'm gonna try to put us right back on schedule here. The next one you had listed down here is Darius Slayton. That's somebody I've never been a huge fan of, so I'm gonna let you try to sell me on Darius Slayton. I don't see it with him.
I mean, I've always been
a huge fan. You don't like Odell Beckham, but Darius Slayton's the guy that does it.
Oh, yeah. There we go. There we go. So, I mean,
how many one-hand catches that man have? Come on.
I'm just a huge fan of Darius Slayton. I mean, I am a Daniel Jones truther. I've been on his side since in college, man. And I am going to ride on and die on the Daniel Jones hill. And, I mean, no running game. They're finally getting Saquon back. There, it looks like the Giants are trying to solidify and work with an offensive line to help Daniel Jones out. And obviously, Daniel Jones needs somebody to throw it to. And Darius Slayton's going to come out there, and I just really like him, especially because he's not worth much right now. He had a relatively down year, and you could pick him up probably for cheap. I mean, right now, I would trade, I mean, a dynasty. I mean, I wouldn't mind giving up a second rounder for him. And I would come away very happy with that trio. And I would take him no problem 10 times out of 10 if I have the ability to get him.
I'm not sold. Peter, can you sell me on Darius Slayton?
I would love to ride with Darius Slayton and the undrafted free agent nature of his profile, but he wasn't exceptionally dominant in college, doesn't have a great production. I have very little to rest on other than that he's been above what you would expect in the NFL. I'm not a big Daniel Jones truther. I don't quarterback prospect, but I know he's not proven, which does not make my list. I have yet to see any positive vibes from the Dallas quarterback situation. I don't think it's any better or worse than a second round pick. That's to pick your poison, I guess, but you're betting on so much there. The quarterback's actually good. They're actually going to build the offensive line, and it's only going to be Darius Slayton there. I don't think that's any better or worse of a dart throw than a second round pick, unfortunately.
No, I think it took a lot for Darius Slayton to do anything.
That's fair.
He did next to nothing last year. And the year before that, it took Golden Tate being out, Evan Ingram being out, any wide receiver basically that they had being out in order for him to A, get on the field, and B, do something. Like, he was the only wide receiver they had. Once you start adding in these other pieces, it's like he just kind of fell to the side. I'm just not a Darius Slayton guy. I can't ride with you on him.
I mean, they did have Golden Tate, and it looks like Daniel Jones and Darius Slayton have some repertoire together, because he is a deep threat and he is a monster after the catch. And in a dynasty startup, you're probably taking him damn near 18th, 19th round. It is easy for him to improve his draft stock than other people would be.
I do love your inclination to go buy production with value. Like, Slayton's much more likely, I think. Yeah, he could produce. I know you get tempted by that ceiling of second round picks sometimes, I guess. But yeah, I don't mind it at all. I just think it's an equal proposition. I'm not winning either way, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
That's just my feeling on it. My fifis. Yeah,
and you're hurting mine. I love Darius
Slayton. And I would love to say yes. Same way with Gabriel Davis. I think you've chosen this list well so far. I'm not sure about this last one. But because it's right on that borderline. You know what I mean? And that's kind of where you want to fish, right?
Yeah. Like, when I created my list, I was looking at who is super low on the list. Nobody worries about, nobody thinks about, but could really make a name for themselves in the up and coming years. Especially, you know, if you're starting up a dynasty league, you want those guys that have higher potential because they elevate your team. I mean, you could go with the safe picks at that point, but does that turn your team into a champions caliber team? I mean, right now, if you go into the rounds where Darius Slayton's getting taken, kickers, defenses are being taken in those rounds. So why go for a defense and a kicker when you can have a potential wide receiver too, potential, you know, up and
is that where the one. First value is though? Because where you're talking about in a startup draft, I don't think there are first round picks left on the board either. You know, that's what I mean. That's why it's kind of walking the edge there for me. I like it a lot. I like the the inclination to go for production, like go win something, man. That's why we're here. But the value's a little off. So value whore. What can I say?
Back to what Peter was saying, how he wasn't sold on Daniel Jones. I'm right there with him since week 12, which was after their bye week. Darius Slayton only had one game above 74 yards. His next highest was 31 yards, and that was since week 12. So a solid six games, no touchdowns, targets 2, 1, 8, 9, 8, 4. So he's getting the targets, just not connecting. He had no more than 4 catches in any game. Like, this is a guy, I just don't get it. Like, I don't trust the quarterback. I surely don't trust the organization. You need so much to go right for him to do anything. It's just, I think you're fooling yourself.
Yeah, I mean, last year they didn't have a running game. They didn't have, you know, Saquon. Obviously, Saquon takes a lot of pressure off the quarterback. It's not Saquon.
It's not Saquon, but what's his name? Not Freeman, because Freeman was garbage. Wholeheartedly admit that.
Oh,
but hey. I mean, Devonta Freeman was garbage last year. But who was it?
Human being, man.
He is. His football play is garbage. I'll correct myself.
I'll play season, bro. I know what you're saying. Let me see who was on the team last year. Wayne Gorman, Dion Lewis, Wayne Alfred Gorman. Morris. Wayne Gorman.
Wayne Gorman was a top 10 fantasy running back last year. In the games that he played.
So is Mike Davis. And Mike Davis is the third stringer for a reason.
Yeah, but Mike Davis is actually pretty fucking good. As a replacement for CMC, he did a pretty good job. just throwing that out there. But no, I think it's a bit of a stretch to say they had a running game, because one running back did pretty well in the games that he was on the field. I mean, he still finished as wide receiver 30. That's not like the equivalent of having Saquon Barkley or whatever.
No, completely agree. Completely agree.
For the team or for the situation or for the function of Darius Slayton. I think that's, I don't know.
I mean, right now, he is the wide receiver one, which typically is a good thing, but in his case, it's a bad thing. You want somebody else to worry about on the defense. Right now, they don't have anybody to worry about. Golden Tate, he's not what he used to be on the Seahawks and the Giants. And then Sterling Shepard, he's always hurt, so it's not like he's ever onto the field to be productive. Right now, all teams are worried about Darius Slayton, and if they can get a running game going, if Daniel Jones progresses a little bit, because it's not like he can't progress. I mean, Josh Allen had the biggest progression uptake than I think we've all seen out of quarterbacks in a recent time. And I mean, if Daniel Jones is able to elevate just a little bit, I think Darius Slayton's production elevates a whole lot more.
And I think your Daniel Jones goggles are just working overtime there. I just put it this way. New York isn't where I'm like, I want to invest as much as possible. You know, I'm not investing much in New York Giants right now. Outside of Saquon Barkley, who's slowly falling in ADP, which is fun to see. But because he's amazing. To be very clear there, that sounded like running back shade. No, I mean, he's really, really good. And if I can get him cheaper, that's better than getting him more expensive. But I just don't see the what would it be? Josh Josh Allen spike in value for the Giants. That's kind of what we're talking about here.
I don't want to hitch my wagon at all to Daniel Jones, bottom line.
Yeah, kind of.
And last Nader you had on here, DJ Dallas, which is somebody I do like. So
I would love for this to work out, by the way. I have so many seconds spent or thirds spent on the DJ Dallases of the world.
There we go.
Like, that would be great. Like,
so, I mean, so talk to us about your boy DJ Dallas here, Nader, because it's not going to take much to convince either one of us. So go for it.
Oh, I mean, let's face it. He has almost the perfect storm forming for him right now to become that elite number one RB. No Chris Carson. We just talked about him not likely being there. Okay, that bumps him up a little bit. Carlos Hyde, he was on a one-year contract last year, so therefore he's a free agent this year. Bump him up just a little bit more. And then now they have Rashad Penny. I mean, he just came off an ACL, and he has a hamstring. He has an ankle injury. He's never played a 16-game season. He hasn't played half of a season. He hasn't played a fourth of a season. DJ Dallas, he has a lot of things working his way right now, inching his way to become stardom. And like you mentioned, we talked about this earlier, Seattle has a lot of injured running backs because of how much they run the ball. Therefore, DJ is going to be able to get volume. And if he gets volume, it's going to equal production. And if you're a Seahawks running back, like we mentioned earlier, you're going to want him on your roster. And I mean, he's young. He's still a second area rookie. He's going to learn a lot from when he just got randomly placed against the Niners. And then he happened to put up two touchdowns and score 22 fantasy points in your league, which was phenomenal. When I had desperation time, I threw him in there. But I mean, I like DJ Dallas, and for wherever he's going in startup dynasty leagues, I will take him one round above that to make sure I solidify him on my roster.
I mean, the danger here is that we always feed into our handcuff narratives, right? And we always get them freaking wrong. That's the difficulty with it. But yeah, I did like him as a prospect. I think he was pretty good in college. And I think that's the best indication we have right now. Like you say, he hasn't played much in the NFL yet, that he may be able to sustain or earn that opportunity. So yeah, I don't hate it. But I picked him up last year. Investing in him now seems like, if that perfect storm you're talking about has increased his value, I don't want to buy now because we get it wrong so often.
The only thing that really worries me about DJ Dallas is something Peter touched on a little bit earlier, is he does have a running back ahead of him with first round draft capital. And if he didn't have running back ahead of him with first round draft capital, The way Rashad Penny has performed the first couple of years, he'd be out of the league right now. But because he's got that first round draft capital, they're going to keep him around and give him a chance because they don't want to show that they were wrong in spending a first round on a running back.
I think it's crazy to me this far into Rashad Penny's career. I can still ask the question because everyone who was against him as a first round running back going to the Seahawks essentially said the talent wasn't there. And at this point, I kind of have to give it to him. Maybe it's not because he hasn't been able to push anyone out the way, but the running back position is much more about chosen volume and that the team has control more so over who gets volume. And so I don't know. I haven't seen him. I will say on a per touch basis, he's been good, but running back is so hard to measure in terms of how well you're performing because it centers around how much volume you're getting. And that, again, goes back to the team. So I guess the question is Rashawn Penny bad, or have they just been wanting to use Chris Carson?
Well, I think, I think it's a little bit of both. And, I mean, the Seahawks don't necessarily use draft capital as the reason to start a player because, I mean, Chris Carson was starting over Rashawn Penny. I mean,
which is kind of the last hanging thread that maybe Penny is still good. That's the thing, yeah, that the Seahawks might not care more as much as others. That's the last hanging thread.
I mean, Richard Sherman, he was a starting corner. He was a 6th-round draft pick. And then the one safety that had to retire early because of a neck injury. Sorry, I can't remember his name at the time. Cam Chancellor, he was a 7th rounder, and he was the elite starter Legion of Boom. And then they had Brandon Browner. He was also the opposite corner of Richard Sherman from the Legion of Boom.
Yeah, so, but also because they've been lucky good at finding values late, but it's because they suck with their early picks. You can use that as the same argument. Like, they miss on their early picks.
Well, Well, that just goes to show they start the better player regardless of draft capital. So, I mean, if DJ Dallas is able to overtake Rashad Penny, then obviously he should probably will be the starter. And because of Rashad Penny, which I think is a good thing that people are focusing on Rashad Penny, because then they won't have the time, or they won't spend the time, or they won't spend the draft capital to taking DJ Dallas, or they'll be more inclined to get rid of DJ Dallas because people are going to think, oh, Rashad Penny's there, or Rashad Penny's going to take the starting role. But realistically, is he probably going to take it?
Throwing your own point back at you from earlier in the show, the other problem is running backs are replaced easily, or replaced easier than we might feel comfortable accepting. And it's not just Dallas who could do that. You could draft a guy late this year. There's a few interesting profiles like Dallas's, or as promising. They could sign another Carlos Hyde. That's the other concern to why the perfect storm normally isn't the perfect storm. I appreciate the bet. Yeah. First round pick, though? Come on, dude.
Taking him in the first round? No. Second round, I'd do that.
Yeah. First round, Barry. What does that mean?
while you guys were talking about that, I went through and looked at the Seattle first round draft picks. They've been really, really bad.
I know, right?
They're probably
2012, their first round pick, they took Bruce Irvin, 15th overall, was a defensive end.
Yeah, he wasn't that bad, but he wasn't that great.
He wasn't that good. 2016, they took German Infidati. He was pretty good.
Who?
German Infidati.
Offensive line?
Yeah, it's a tackle.
Okay, there we go.
2018, they took Rashard Penny. 2019, LJ Collier. It's just, and then they've traded away their first round picks as well the last couple of years. Like, it's just, they're probably better trading their first round pick away and getting a proven player at this point than trying to actually draft a player.
Well, they did that with Jamal Adams, but Jamal Adams, realistically, yeah, he was a disappointment compared to what they gave away for him. And I'd have to say the last time they drafted somebody really well with their first round pick, I think, was Earl Thomas, right? What was that, 2013, was it?
Yeah.
There we go.
So I wasn't expecting Jamal Adams to come in and set the world on fire, especially going to a new team basically at the beginning of the year, where he didn't have much opportunity to learn the playbook, get in the practices, and all that they needed. So I'm not ready to write off that trade yet. I think next year we'll see a much better Jamal Adams. So
a lot of people are comparing him to Minkah Fitzpatrick, who was traded for less, and he was much more productive and much more dominant than Jamal Adams was. I mean, it felt like Minkah Fitzpatrick was getting an interception every game, or an interception for a touchdown every other game. Meanwhile, Jamal Adams, his best statistic was he led the team in sacks.
Was that because he had Minkah Fitzpatrick played on an overall better defense where they could get a lot more pressure on the quarterback, where in Seattle they're not getting much pressure on the quarterback at all?
It depends on the system and how they decide to use him, which now we go back to scheme over player potential. Yeah. But I have to say, if you're an elite safety, an elite cover tight end, or a cover safety that can cover a tight end, I expect a little bit more out of you.
No argument here. We're not going to jump into IDP. I don't think that's anybody here's forte.
No.
I was going to say, you got the wrong Englishman on this show. It should be Tom Kissingberry at this point.
Yeah, no, we're definitely going to steer clear of IDP. I don't want to get into it. Was there, Nader, so those were the three that you had. Was there anybody else you wanted to bring up, talk about?
Honorable mention, Ryan Tannehill. I think a lot of people are going to be focusing on the Lamar Jacksons, Patrick Mahomes, the Matthew Stafford's probably pretty interesting that people want. But Ryan Tannehill, he had, I believe, 7 rushing touchdowns last year. And, you know, if you're in a 4-point passing league, that's an extra 4 passing touchdowns, if my math is correct. So, I mean,
math on the show.
Oh, sorry, my bad. So, he brings a lot of sneaky value that other quarterbacks probably don't offer you. And Ryan Tannehill, he's in a perfect storm and situation in himself. I mean, he's got the All-Pro AJ Brown on one side, and then he's got a monstrous Derrick Henry that everybody's worried about on the back end.
Peter, you got thoughts on Ryan Tannehill?
Yeah, actually, it goes back to what I actually, his name came up when I was discussing that with DLF. Like the Carson Wentz take, I think there's going to be extra value in these less certain but productive and good players because of our uncertainty with the quarterback, or increasing uncertainty with the quarterback position. So Ryan Tannehill, I think someone's definitely fits into that conversation. So yeah, I was actually thinking about him the other day, thinking he might be a potential guy to send trade off as a Superflex specifically, but yeah, I'm all for it. Whatever he said, that way I can't be wrong next time I come back. You can't be like, you know, remember what you said. No, I was actually just searching through my ranks in DLF, and these aren't, you had second round values, and I think I've spoken too long for you to get to them. But like long distance shots, which I guess is, and considering what we were talking about at first round value, Cole Beasley came up for me. I have him ranked higher than DLF, which seems kind of crazy to me. Also, Corey Davis, obviously. Darnell Mooney from last year's draft class. He had one of those impressive Gabriel Davis-like seasons that might be getting underrated right now. And Antonio Golden-Gendy, who did nothing, but didn't get much play in his first year, and I liked him as a prospect. And so I'm always kind of trying to pick up more of those guys I thought were good, but maybe got overdrafted because of the hype. But, you know, he's not costing you a second-round pick at this point, which is why I like him.
Yeah, I like Darnell Mooney. I think that's a good one. I think he has a lot of potential. I think the only issue is the quarterback and the coaching system there that a lot of people don't like or don't want to be associated with, right, which actually helps you out, considering you want him and you're probably going to pay less for it. So, I mean, in a way, that's a good thing.
Yeah, he's kind of my Gabriel Davis pick. I see him as kind of similar. Again, good rookie seasons with lower draft capital. I mean, yeah, both are pretty good.
So, Peter, I'm not going to let you get out of here without asking you a question that I was told to ask you.
Okay.
Our mutual friend Josh from Fusion Fantasy Football, he wanted me to ask you which rookie wide receiver is this class's Henry Ruggs trap?
Oh, okay. As in overdrafted? I don't know. I'll wait till the draft, and I'll tell you which first round pick sucks, I guess. But and I really haven't delved into the quote unquote market yet. I've been mostly focusing on my own evaluations, but you hear whispers, I guess. I would love to say Devontae Smith, but it seems people have wised up on him. Like, he's better than you might think if you just paid attention to breakout age. But people already see on him because he had a dominant season. And he's okay. It's my second tier, so I can't hate him too much. The guy's name who keeps coming up, and I don't get it, is actually Terrence Marshall. He played in the SEC West for Louisiana State. I've seen buzz for him, and I can't find anything positive. Like, it all sucks. Like, it all looks bad. And Henry Ruggs wasn't actually quite that bad as a profile. I wrote a whole article on a positive argument for Henry Ruggs through data. And you could see at least Harry was a significant playmaker on a team with a diffuse wide receiver core and was scoring so much more touchdowns than you expect based on the volume that he was getting. But Terrence Marshall, I don't get it at all. So maybe him. And I've heard it rumored he's going to get draft capital. That's what brings him to mind.
Yeah, if Terrence Marshall gets high draft capital, I will honestly be shocked.
That makes me feel better than, because I've looked so hard. I don't see where the hype's coming from.
I agree. I don't get it.
Like, I've seen him. I mean, maybe I'm misremembering. Again, this is something we're saying earlier. We feel like everyone's saying stuff, and then when you go ask, no one actually had or owns up to holding that position. But I swear I've seen him ranked top 12 in this class or top 5 in some instances, and I'm like, I don't get that at all. So,
if I see somebody having him ranked in their top 5 wide receivers in this class, that's going to be an immediate unfollow on Twitter, because you should not be doing that.
True. I think people are kind of reaching right now. They're trying to clickbait a little bit, trying to get some attention.
It's February 18th, so you're probably right. We're all just probably trying to put something out there a little spicy to get a couple little clicks, a couple little numbers and whatnot. So, I can see that.
Well, something I've been digging into more this offseason than I have before is conferences, and it comes from what's designated as, and again, I don't know why people keep asking me why I call it West and East SEC, because that's the way it came to me when I in the data. But the SEC West is the most highly drafted conference for the NFL since 2000. Like, look at all players drafted in the first three rounds. The SEC West is, like, by a large margin where all the draft capital goes. And he's playing in that conference. That's the positive I can find.
You found more positive quality than I did. All right, well, we got the answer to the question. It is Terrence West. Wow.
I confused it with the SEC West. Yeah, it's Marshall.
Yeah, it's Terrence Marshall. It's been a long day. it is definitely my bedtime. Let's go ahead and put a bow on this episode. Let's go ahead and wrap it up. Peter, again, I want to thank you for coming on. Nader, I want to thank you once again for joining me tonight. This has been a lot of fun. Peter, we'll start with you. Tell everybody where they can follow you, where they can get your content. And then Nader, you do the same, and then we'll get out of here.
I've gotten somewhat better at this. Let me try. You can follow me on Twitter at PA Howdy, which is where you'll find me most of the time because I can't stop talking about football. I pretty much just live on Twitter, but I have recently started making YouTube videos so I can be owned face to face, as it were. And you can find some of my content over there now, including rookie profiles of some of this class already. And I write, and all my written content goes to Dynasty League Football or DLF on Twitter, DLF Football. See, I almost sound like I like to plug, and I want people to go check my stuff out. Like, I'm almost there. Almost a professional shill. Almost.
Not bad.
No, I really appreciate you asking me on, guys. I always enjoy talking to you. And, it's nice to be reminded of all the bad takes I had, obviously. I
appreciate that. Thanks, Nader.
Okay. It's what I do. Like, I can't tell you.
You got it, man. Long. You got it.
I can't. Every single time OBJ did something good, immediately my first thought is, oh man, Peter's gonna say something about this next time I see him. He's gonna say, like after that Cowboys game, I was like, oh man, I gotta stay away from Peter, he might say something about it. And then after he started declining, I was like, oh, never mind, I'm ready to face Peter now.
No, and for the record, I'm still on Team OBJ, so you can own me against next year. Like, I like him. I think he's good.
There we go. You guys could find me at top-tier-tactics_, where you guys could either see me on YouTube with this phenomenal supposed green screen right behind me. We kind of mess around with that. And then, of course, on my podcast with my other co-host, who is currently in the hospital right now. I think the baby is coming out any day now. It hasn't came yet. It actually has not came out yet.
They can be stubborn that way.
They can be pretty stubborn. That baby has not come out yet, but you can find us at Top Tier Tactics on any podcasting platform or on YouTube.
All right, and you can follow me on Twitter at BFTGpod. I didn't even know my own Twitter handle. I really need to go to bed.
I didn't even mention my own podcast, man. It's good. Keep it rolling.
So, he
said it, and I was like, I got one of those. I'll forget it.
Peter, real quick, I do got one last question because we were talking about this before you joined us.
Sure.
You live in Kentucky, right?
Yes.
Oh, okay. This is a good one.
So we got a little bored. We Googled things to do in Kentucky. Didn't find a whole lot. Then we Googled things to do in Wyoming and didn't find a whole lot. So I need to know, which state would you rather live in? And clearly you're living in Kentucky, but Wyoming or Kentucky? Which one would you go with?
I've never been to Wyoming, so it's really impossible to make a comparison. I will say I really like living here. The people are amazing. I have a lot of fun, a lot of friends and some such here. So I'm a big fan of Kentucky, so I'm just going to say Kentucky. No shade to Wyoming. I'm sure you're okay. Wonderful too. These guys hate the small town rural America. I do not. Again, a little bit of a separation here. I'm a fan.
I live in a small town. I like it. It's just we were just Googling things to do in Kentucky, and no. Other than the Kentucky Derby, like, there wasn't a whole lot.
Okay, you got to be more targeted than that, man. Check out Lexington, check out small town state fairs, I guess. But no, there's some fun. Not right now. We literally can't get to work right now. We're not meant to go anywhere right now, because even if the roads weren't just solid ice, there's a pandemic. So, yeah, not a lot to do right now. I will say it's one of the last few places that I know of that still have surviving drive-in movie theaters. And as someone who only learned about America through the movies, like, going to a drive-in movie, like, it's just... I love them, and they're dying out, and there was four when I got here, and now there's just two in operation, close enough in driving distance, and I don't know how many states are actually surviving, and I don't know why, because they are, like, pure Americana stuff. Like growing up watching movies, there's always a drive-in movie in old American movies, and they are just as awesome as you think, in my experience. And so we still at least have a couple of those. So you can do that in Kentucky. That's pretty cool. I don't know if they can.
I like that. I used to go to drive-in movies when I was a kid with my parents. So I'm
do right they still exist around there?
They did in Massachusetts. I lived up in Western Massachusetts, and small town population of about 700. So we had a drive-in theater.
No, I fear for them because all I hear about is how they're dwindling, and they are, you know, this is just a different kind of experience. As far as I know, they don't exist in England, and that's just me being provincial, I guess. But having been to them and met the people that run them and trying to keep them operating, like, they're wonderful places and such a different kind of movie experience where kids are playing over there and people meet in groups. And it's just, well, not anymore, not right now, but it used to be really fun.
It used to be fantastic. Nader, I'm going to guess no drive-in theaters up there in San Francisco, right?
I would assume there is. I have no idea, actually.
Somewhere there's someone.
Because, like, right? You know, San Francisco, it's kind of like the hipster place. So I would assume they try to be hipster enough to have a drive-in movie theater, but I wouldn't go regardless because, I mean, when you go to the movie theater, for me, at least, you go for the experience of, like, the loud sound, loud banging, all the high definition sound and all that good stuff. So, I mean, I only go to the movie theater to watch the new Star Wars whenever that comes out. But other than that, I'm not necessarily a movie person for that.
Again, it's a very different experience. Like, it does not replace the other one. I actually do really miss going to the cinema, or the theater, as you're calling it, I guess. But, it's a different kind of experience. And it's also a marathon. Like, you can go to the movies for fun, and then you go out to eat. When you go to a drive-in, like, there's two movies playing on each screen. It's like you've got a book all night. You're tired. By the time you drive home, you are worn the hell out. It's a whole thing. But talking about hipsters starting them up, I don't know if they would implant them on purpose, but like at the ones around here, you can still see like the old fashioned stereos that used to hook to the side of your car door. So you just tune the radio, but they're still there from when you used to have these speakers. And it's just, sorry, didn't mean to talk this much about America, small town Kentucky Americana, but they are wonderful.
Nah, I brought it up. It's all good. So with that, that's how we're going to end it. Good old Americana drive-in movie theaters. It does not get better than that, folks. If you have never been to one, they are highly recommended by Peter, myself, Nader. you just hate America and you hate Americana. It's all good.
We're now an Americana podcast. Declaring
it right now. The transition was seamless. All right. Let's get out of here again. Nader, Peter, I want to thank you guys both for coming on. Had a great time tonight, and let's do it again soon.